We have sold our Goldcorp and purchased Newmont, even though on an arbitrage basis, it's a negative arbitrage, but we've done it because if Newmont succeeds in buying Goldcorp, I think Newmont will go up. If Barrick succeeds in buying Newmont, I think the combined entity will go up. So we're still exposed. But if Newmont doesn't buy Goldcorp, Goldcorp will fall. So we're protecting our downside in that.
This episode of Mining Stock Education is brought to you by Blue Sky Uranium Corporation. Blue Sky Uranium has first mover advantage in Argentina in the world's newest uranium and vanadium district. With an existing near-surface deposit that is open for expansion, Blue Sky Uranium also controls a massive district-scale land package with mineralization along a 145-kilometer long trend. Blue Sky Uranium possesses tremendous exploration upside and is an excellent leverage play on rising uranium and vanadium prices. The company is run by a best-in-class management and technical team with proven exploration and development success in Argentina. Blue Sky Uranium trades under the ticker BSK on the Toronto Venture Exchange and as BKUCF on the OTC. For more information and to stay on top of the latest news, go to blueskyuranium.com. That's blueskyuranium.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for tuning in to another Mining Stock Education episode. I'm Bill Powers, your host. I'm still at the PDAC 2019, and I'm sitting down with Adrian Day of Adrian Day Asset Management. Adrian, thanks for taking the time to sit down.
Well, thank you for having me, Bill.
So we did an interview 6 or so weeks ago, which was well-received. I'd like to get your thoughts on PDAC thus far. You've been to many of these. How is this one similar or different than past conferences?
It seems to me there are fewer people here. Now, does the weather play a part? You know, we've had a pretty balmy Toronto for the last couple of years. This one's not so balmy. Does that play a role? I don't know. There's different things that play a role, but there's definitely fewer people and particularly fewer investors at the, what they call the investor forum. So is that a good country indicator, maybe?
Anything else you're picking up on with the conferences?
The companies are much more active, it seems to me. There's a lot of financings going on. Someone asked me last night, I counted them. I've had 7 finances offered in the last 2 weeks, and I haven't even walked the floor yet, so there'll be more. So there's been a lot of financings, a lot of exploration work going on. So from the corporate point of view, from the company point of view, I think it's a very positive environment.
If we could compare that to past years, how many finances were you offered
around
PDAC in past
years? Yeah, normally, 3, 4 maybe. So it's a lot more this year.
Does that mean companies are looking for money, starving for money, or do you think that there's some good projects out
there? It's a combination. Some of the companies that are coming are starving for money. They need it desperately. Some of them just think this is a good time to finance. There's been a little bit of a pickup in the market. It's a good time to finance. But frankly, interestingly, at least half of these, or 3 of them out of 7, are either new companies or shells being taken over, or new people coming into a project. And that's very positive.
As you do your due diligence on these opportunities that when they're presented to you, what percentage of these opportunities do you actually take?
Well, funnily enough, these 7 are all 7 that I've done. So we have been offered more. The 7 are all 7 that we've done. And that's a very high number for me to do in a 2-week period. You know, we manage a fund, but most of our assets are in individual accounts. So there's obviously a limit to how much money, how much money you can put into, what tend to be more illiquid stocks. Private placements tend to be relatively illiquid. They're smaller companies. Typically, they have 4-month holds. So there's a limit to how many of them you can do. This is definitely more than normal. How many do we take? I tend to be a lot more selective than a lot of people. To me, when you're offered a private placement, the first thing I ask myself is, would I buy this company, this stock in the market at today's price? Would I buy it? Because if I'm not interested in buying the company at today's price, I don't care if it has a 10% discount and a 5-year warrant, with whatever. It doesn't matter to me how attractive the terms are if you don't actually want to own the company. We look at ourselves as owners, not as traders. So I only invest in companies that I actually want to potentially hold for several years.
In our last interview several weeks ago, we talked about the mega mergers between the gold majors. And then in the last week or so, Barrick is now trying to do what I've heard called a take under of Newmont. What are your thoughts?
You know, I have different views than a lot of people. I think, first of all, I think the Barrick-Newmont, a Barrick-Newmont merger makes sense. And, you know, a lot of
because
people
of
have
synergies.
Talked about because of real, genuine synergies. Now, Newmont's answer is you can get most of those synergies in another form by setting up a joint venture to run Nevada. But it's not just Nevada. There are real synergies, potential synergies with that deal. Whereas if you look at Newmont Gold Corp, there's really no synergies. I think Newmont said $100 million of synergies, which for a company that size is a rounding error. It's meaningless. What are you going to do, save on the paperclips and rubber bands or something? We call them rubber bands. What do you call them in America?
Rubber bands.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm from Detroit, so we
say
rubber bands.
Rubber bands, good. So, you know, there's no synergies there. Barrick, Randgold, you know, there really weren't any synergies. But there was a rationale, which was buying a good team of good operators, which Barrick unfortunately lacks. Barrick has some good assets, but lacks good operators. I'm talking in generalizations here, of course. So they picked up a good team. You might argue there are cheaper ways of buying a team than buying a whole company, but nonetheless, there were rationales in that particular deal. I don't think there's a lot of rationale in Newmont buying Goldcorp other than just getting bigger. Now, where I differ from a lot of people is I think Barrick has a very good chance of succeeding in their bid for Newmont. And the reason is if you just look at the share register, you know, the top five owners of Barrick all are top five owners of Newmont. The top 20 shareholders of Barrick actually own 90% of the shares of Newmont. So if Barrick can convince its own shareholders that it's a bad deal for Newmont to buy Goldcorp, and that a much better deal is for Barrick to merge with Newmont, they've got the deal done.
And thus they went straight to the market and made their case.
Exactly. It's the same shareholders. Now, the same shareholders are also in the top five of Goldcorp, but the dollars that BlackRock and First Eagle and the others own in Goldcorp is a lot less than the dollars they own in Barrick. So their best interest, they're going to say, where is our best interest? And I think they're going to come on the side of Barrick merging with Newmont.
If this deal goes through, how does that affect the miners lower down on the food chain?
That's a very good question, because Newmont and Goldcorp in particular are both very active in joint ventures, regional alliances, different kinds of deals with junior companies and exploration companies. Goldcorp in particular has been active in taking over smaller companies that have had a discovery. So these companies are very active, are very important for the juniors. If either of these two deals takes place, we will get a lot of asset disposals. We're going to get asset disposals from Barrick and Randgold. They just haven't happened yet. So there's going to be a lot of assets that are smaller, marginal to the bigger companies that are going to come onto the market. I suspect some of them will be packaged and spun off into the market, you know, as a public company. But however it's done, all of that is taking money from the market. You know, there's only so much money available in this business. But in particular, if companies like Agnico and Yamana and even smaller companies like, let's just say, B2 or whoever, are looking at the assets that Barrick and Newmont are going to be getting rid of, that's money. If they buy those assets today, that's money they can't spend on juniors. So I think for a few months, at any rate, there might be a little bit of a drought in money available for juniors.
And then from the retail investor perspective, where might good investment opportunities arise because of this merger?
Good question. You know, we have sold our Goldcorp and purchased Newmont, even though on an arbitrage basis, it's a negative arbitrage, but we've done it because if Newmont succeeds in buying Goldcorp, I think Newmont will go up. If Barrick succeeds in buying Newmont, I think the combined entity will go up. So we're still exposed. But if Newmont doesn't buy Goldcorp, Goldcorp will fall. So we're protecting our downside in that. I think it's a matter of, I really think this is a dynamic thing. We just have to keep our eyes on the market. I'm sure that there'll be companies buying assets that you say, wow, what a great deal that is. You know, company X buying one of Barrick's cast-offs. And you say, wow, what a great deal that is. But we don't know what that is until it happens. And then you want to buy the company.
So the investors just need to be knowledgeable about the certain projects.
Sure.
And the valuation.
Sure. And maybe, you know, company X wants to buy a project that's a great project for them, synergies, fits, getting it at a great price, but they have to go into the market to raise money, the stock falls, maybe that's the time to buy it. So you just have to be knowledgeable and aware, but I think that's a dynamic process right now.
Another major...
Let me say one other thing, if I may. I also think this brings up potentially a lot of good opportunities for the major royalty companies, the ones with a lot of money, because, again, I mentioned Company X buying this asset, having to go to the market to buy, to raise money. Well, of course, another way of funding it is to sell a royalty to Franco or Royal Gold or Wheaton or whatever. So there'll be opportunities for the royalty and streaming companies.
Mm-hmm. We'll be right back after this word from our sponsor. Orin Resources is a junior exploration company with the appetite of a major, focused on finding the next globally significant discovery to create enormous potential upside for shareholders. It's one of the most aggressive exploration companies pursuing high-grade, scalable gold and copper deposits and has a premier 7-project portfolio, including its 2 flagships, Committee Bay in the Arctic and Sombrero in Peru. With Orin's unparalleled technical team and highly experienced management with a history of success in advancing and monetizing exploration assets, Orin has been called one of the best in the junior exploration sector. Orin trades on the TSX and NYSE under the ticker AUG. To learn more, go to orinresources.com. That's A-U-R-Y-N resources.com.
Another major miner is Vale, and they had their dam collapse, and there was many casualties as a result of that, and the management's really been taking a lot of heat. What are your thoughts on this, and what are some key takeaways for investors?
Yeah, how can I put this without... the risk of a libel suit. Let's just say I don't think it's a surprise that it happened to Vale in Brazil and didn't happen to, let's say, Goldcorp in Mexico. So let's not say more about Vale because I don't want to get a lawsuit, but generally speaking, I think the major North American companies, the major Australian companies are all very, very environmentally aware. You can have an accident, of course, anywhere, but this was an accident that shouldn't have happened, right? I mean, it was upstream and they were just piling more and more stuff on, more and more waste onto the pile before it had had a chance to settle. So this was an accident that shouldn't have happened. I don't think you're going to see this kind of thing with Goldcorp or Barrick or Newmont, which are more responsible operators. But clearly, everyone is concerned about this, both from a reality, I mean, it's a tragedy, it's a horrible tragedy, from a reality, but also from a perception. And so companies are getting engineers to check their tailings dams so they can put out a statement saying, we've had this firm check our tailings dam and everything's all right. So I think in the end, that's good for companies. It's good for investors. I don't mean tragedy was good. I mean, the result is good in the sense that investors now can have more confidence in A, B, C, D, and E, even if they don't have more confidence in E, F, G, and H. So I think that's good. There's also a move afoot that you probably know to set international standards on tailings dams, and then tailings dams will be certified by
an international group. So it's going to spur on change,
yeah.
Productive change. Because there's no really a way for the average investor in North America to know if this tailing dam is about to collapse.
No, absolutely. And I don't think I'm an average investor, but I wouldn't have known. except that A Valley has had these problems before, which, having had the problem, it should never happen again, frankly. And as I say, you know, some companies perhaps have a different reputation than other companies, let's just put it that way.
So that's the main thing an investor, outside investor, could assess the company's history in dealing with this certain issue.
Right, but having a sort of international certification on tailings, I think, is important. There's a lot of companies, for example, when they're doing feasibilities in particularly Latin American countries, who will put a dry tailings dam into their feasibility, even though in truth they don't need a dry tailings dam, even though in truth a wet tailings dam would be perfectly safe if properly built, perfectly safe, a lot less expensive, and the appropriate thing for that project, but they're putting the extra money in for a dry tailings dam simply for perception, to help calm the fears of locals, to get it through the local permitting process a lot quicker. So that is already happening.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to get your feedback and your commentary on this report that PDAC put out just as this conference commenced. One of the summary points is that the mineral industry equity financing in 2018 dropped by nearly 35% from a year earlier to establish a new decade low for both total value raised and number of transactions completed, according to the report. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think the largest part of the drop would have been among the major companies. There was still a reasonable amount of activity among juniors, but it's particularly picked up this year. With the pickup in the market, you know, typically juniors will go to market, I mean, obviously A, when they absolutely need the money, but B, when the market's receptive. And we had a very short rally at the beginning of 2018. It petered out much sooner than people thought it would. So for, you know, 9-10 months of a year, it was just simply not a good market to raise money. This year, we've got a bit of a catch-up already from people who didn't raise money last year who should have or wanted to. So we're getting a lot of companies taking advantage of this rally. So I suspect these numbers will get an increase this year. But so much of this, of course, depends on the major companies, and that can be one deal here. You know, if one company raises $1 billion, it offsets 100 juniors raising a million or more than that, raising a million or 5 million.
Last time we talked about copper.
Yes.
What's your current thoughts on copper?
Well, I'm still bullish. I think there's a definite supply deficit, a real supply deficit coming in 3-4 years. And I emphasize the word real, because unlike, say, with the deficit we have in uranium, at the moment, that's not a real deficit, because the deficit is caused by Kazakhstan stopping a lot of the exports and by Cameco shutting down MacArthur River, which was the largest privately owned, publicly owned, non-governmental uranium mine in the world. So those things could be reversed pretty quickly. With copper, we're getting a real structural deficit coming in a few years. Yeah, two things have happened recently, one positive, one potentially negative for copper. One is, you know, we've seen a slowdown in the economy in China, and every time I talk about a slowdown in the economy, we have to put that in a context. It's a slowdown in the growth rate. It's still growing pretty dramatically, but we've seen a decline in the growth of electric vehicle sales. Now, electrical vehicle sales in China, we should point out, China is the largest market in the world for electric vehicles. And we don't really think of China necessarily as being a green country. But so that's a negative. If that economy continues, the rate of growth continues to slow, and car sales continue to decline, that would be a negative for copper, because a lot of copper obviously goes to electric vehicles. On the other hand, if we see as looks increasingly likely from the recent news, if we see a trade deal, successful trade deal between the US and China, I think that will relieve a lot of the pressure on the Chinese economy. And so, you know, that will be good for copper. The thing about copper is you've got the traditional uses, and 50% of the copper consumed in the world is in China. So we need the Chinese economy to be reasonably strong for the, what I call the standard traditional uses of copper to be strong. At the same time, you've got the new uses of copper, particularly in electric vehicles. And again, we really depend largely on China, but not entirely, for those sales. So the Chinese economy is very important to China.
As we conclude this interview, Adrian, for the remainder of 2019, are you still bullish on commodities?
I am. I think gold and silver are the most attractive because they don't depend on a strong global economy. The base metals depend on a strong global economy. And, you know, when you look at, to me, the most important thing that's happened for gold and silver, but particularly for gold, number one, we had the volatility in the stock market at the end of the year, which led a lot of investors, particularly, you know, institutional investors, to feel they needed some gold as a hedge. So we saw large inflows into ETFs. So the volatility in the financial markets is very important. And the fact that the Federal Reserve has paused its tightening, which really didn't last very long, that's very, very positive for gold. And it's particularly positive for gold because the Fed basically blinked. When they saw the financial market, the stock market volatility, they blinked. And when the Federal Reserve will not or cannot pursue the policy it wants to pursue because of market reaction, that is very, very positive for gold, in my view.
Excellent insights. Well, as always, I appreciate sitting down with you, Adrian, and I look forward to speaking with you again.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
This episode of Mining Stock Education is brought to you by U.S. Gold Corp. U.S. Gold Corp. is a U.S.-focused gold exploration and development company advancing high-potential projects in Wyoming and Nevada. U.S. Gold Corp. has consolidated a district on Nevada's productive Cortex Trend and is advancing the Copper King project towards production in Wyoming. Led by a team of prolific company builders and renowned explorers, including Dave Mathewson, who's directly responsible for several major Nevada gold discoveries, U.S. Gold Corp. is well-financed and has an extremely tight share structure with less than 20 million shares outstanding, and it trades on a major stock exchange, the NASDAQ, under the ticker USAU. To learn more, go to usgoldcorp.gold. That's usgoldcorp.gold. Thank you for listening to this Mining Stock Education podcast. Please subscribe and share with like-minded investors. Visit us on the web at miningstockeducation.com for more resources on precious metals and natural resource investing. At our website, you can also sign up for our free newsletter for interview transcripts, stock picks, and more. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be considered personal legal or investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell securities or any other product. We make every effort to be accurate, but the information presented is not to be considered infallible. It may contain errors, and we offer no inferred or explicit warranty. If personal advice is needed, consult a qualified legal, tax, or investment professional. Do not base any investment decision on the information contained on miningstockeducation.com, our podcasts, or videos. Make sure you always conduct your own thorough due diligence before investing. Realize that we may hold equity positions in or be compensated by some of the companies we feature and therefore are biased and hold an obvious conflict of interest. For our full disclaimer, please visit our website.